offering our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's afternoon satsang. As always, we're coming to you live from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. And this is Prem from Team Radio Sai with Arvind. We started going through the nine forms of devotion or nine paths of devotion, as Swami would refer to it as Navaveda Bhakti. We had the first session, which was an introduction. We had one session on the first path, which was Shravanam. In last week, we had again, I would say, enlightening even for us, a discussion on Kirtanam. The wonderful way where we, through Swami's message, derived what really Kirtanam is. We're going to continue that because whatever we say that Kirtanam is larger than the act of singing or the act of glorifying the Lord through music, Kirtanam does in many ways relate to that aspect of devotion. So we will be dwelling more into that, but before that I think we should have a quick recap of what we had last week. That will give us a bit of context and it will be a good way to go forward. But before we do that, as always, Arvind is here. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and it's once again a beautiful opportunity. It's a double bonus to do Kirtanam on the subject of Kirtanam, because as we started off last week, we started off with Kirtanam being singing the glories of God. And as we said last week, we have got an abundance of literature, Sai literature, based on what Swami has spoken in his discourses on this Kirtanam, which is singing the glories of the Lord. So we had thought that we will keep it aside for this week.
Right.
But last week, I think we further went into saying that when you say singing the Lord's glory, it need not be just musically with songs. You can sing the Lord's glory as you speak. You can sing the Lord's glories as you write. Any kind of output that comes from your body or mind could be a way to sing the Lord's glory. Then, you know, we went further deeper. As we go deeper, it gets more magical, it gets more beautiful. In Shravanam also, when we went fully deeper, Shravanam came. Shravanam first transformed from listening into any kind of input, whatever we see, whatever we taste, whatever we feel. And then therefore Shravanam got beautifully defined by Bhagwan's grace as vibrations and being aware to the vibes around. That is Shravanam. So Kirtanam became subtle and beautiful as expressing gratitude, where every act that we do in our day-to-day life, whether we are conscious or unconscious, it is conscious or unconscious of the act, it becomes an act of gratitude to Swami. Because we realize that when we say we are singing the Lord's glory, we are able to sing the Lord's glory only when we recognize the Lord's glory. And the moment we recognize the Lord's glory, gratitude is an automatic and spontaneous byproduct. You can't stay without gratitude. Therefore, when you are able to identify the Lord's glory every moment of your life, when you are singing the Lord's glory every moment of your life, it only means you are being grateful to Swami, being grateful to God every moment of your life. And therefore, by Bhagwan's grace, we beautifully arrived at this kind of a summary of Kirtanam as expressing gratitude every moment of our life to Swami is the process of continuous Kirtanam.
Absolutely. In fact, I was really surprised to see this definition of bhakti in one of Swami's discourses. If I'm not wrong, it is, I think, in 1988, Swami had invited all the overseas devotees for a special session in the bhajan hall.
Mm-hmm.
And while giving a discourse on that occasion, Swami made this point. He said, what is devotion? Okay, can you define devotion?
Mm-hmm.
And then Swami said, is doing bhajans devotion, is doing seva devotion, is doing nam japam devotion. What is devotion?
Mm-hmm.
And that time Swami described that devotion is nothing but an expression of your gratitude. And that expression can be in any of these things. You know, as bhajans, as prayers, as your morning suprabhatam or whatever it is. And the important point which Swami was making is, you know, that paradigm shift which occurs when you say that bhajans are an expression of gratitude. No more bhajans are an expression of your pain in prayer, actually.
You
know, it's not like, oh God, don't you have any mercy, come and save me. Or, you know, are you so heartless? It's, you know, that means when you're in prayer, I mean, when you want something and you ask. But Swami said bhajan should always be an expression of gratitude, which means, you know, I've already got what I need and I thank you for that. you know, that changes so much, because immediately you say that it is not seeking something, it is only expressing for whatever I've got.
You know, exactly, because we often think that we do bhajans or whatever spiritual sadhana we think of generally. We do it because we want to please Swami, so that it's almost like we want to please Swami so that He grants what we seek. So actually, if you see at the fundamental basis, there's this feeling of lack, there's a lacuna. I don't have it, therefore let me butter God, let me please God by these methods, and He will grant me this. But instead, if bhajans become an expression of gratitude, it's so different, because if you have to express gratitude, you can't be feeling lacuna. It's only when you feel fulfilled, when you feel complete, it is only then that you have gratitude. So you see, though it seems like a small change in word, it actually makes a world of difference. Absolutely. To how you're feeling.
Right. In fact, sometime back, one of our listeners were here, and you know, he was talking. He said, he just expressed his feeling, which probably is true for all of us. He said, you know, whatever you speak about Advaita and all that, when I look at myself, I feel that I'm still in the stage of a devotee who comes to God for, you know, for the artha arthaarthi kind of, prayers. I still come to Him when there's a health problem. And when you look at it, actually speaking, when you say this, Swami says that devotion is nothing but an expression of gratitude. You're talking about a relationship where you say that, you know, every day I sing bhajans. I don't sing bhajans because I need something. I sing bhajans because, you know, my heart is full and this is the best way I can express it. And when you have established that relationship with God, and now you go to God when you have a health problem, when you go to God when you have any other problem, it is not because you are turning to God when there's a problem, but you're turning to God because for whatever it is, I'm going to turn to God.
Exactly, exactly.
It is no more an artha arthaarthi kind of a relationship. It's more of a, you know, you are the first point I'm going to turn to. I'm not going to run after anybody else. Why would I go and beg from other beggars when you are in front of me, right? You know, that's the attitude. That's where I think, you know, when you talk of, when Krishna says artha arthaarthi jignasu and jnani, the jnani is such a paradoxical, you know, there's no description for that. Of course, there's so many verses where Krishna describes a jnani, but all those descriptions does not exclude a jnani from an artha arthaarthi jignasu, because he's still wondering, you know, what is the essence of life. He's still having his problems and turning to God. But I think that is what makes the difference. You become a person who turns to God at every point, happiness or, you know, lack.
Just as you were mentioning this point about a person doesn't turn to God only in times of difficulty, he turns to God in times of difficulty because irrespective of what the time in his life is, he turns to God.
Right.
I'm reminded of this episode, this little episode, which is quite popular, about how in Vrindavan, in Whitefield, when the hostel was being built, in order to make a spacious hostel, Bhagwan had asked for the plans, and the plans had been drawn for a hostel to be constructed quite close to the university building. Though it made practical sense to be adjacent to the university, like how it is in Puttaparthi.
Right.
It was a painful thing for the students because it meant going far away from Bhagwan's residence, so they felt that they would be away from Swami. And there's a famous story of how one student wrote a letter to Swami saying that, Swami, we would rather live in a small shed by your side rather than living in a comfortable, luxurious, to whatever extent, accommodation that's available but which is far from you. And Bhagwan read that letter and changed the entire plans. In fact, the hostel today, it exists right next to Swami's residence, and it has actually been built in a tank. You know, Vrindavan Hostel, that's why we had a quadrangle that's in the, that's like a basement, minus one floor, because it was a water tank there, and that area, that water tank was dried up and the hostel was built there so that the students could be close to Swami. Why I remembered this is, when this incident was being narrated, someone said, this is what happens when you make God your first resort. We often make God the last resort, you know, having tried everything else. When everything, all else fails, we say, okay, God, I have tried my best, I have nothing else, now I turn to you. There also there's some kind of ego, you know, let me try, mostly I think I can solve this. In case I'm not able to solve, I'll get back to you, you know, like that. So he was saying, this teacher was saying that, why should we make God our last resort? Why can't we make Him our first resort? And you know, what you spoke right now was about that, about making God the first resort. Because irrespective of what happens in life, I turn to God. And that is why even when a tragedy happens or something difficult happens to me in life, I also turn to God, because irrespective of whatever happens in life, I always turn to God first. And I think that is a nice understanding of how Kirtanam should practically express itself in our day-to-day lives.
Right, and I think this is actually the basis of devotion itself, the turning to God first before you turn to anything else. And it's a lifelong process. You know, I might get it right in one scenario, but might mess it up in the other scenario. Hmm. You know, when put in a tight spot, I might choose, I mean, going and asking somebody next door and getting it sorted sometimes might be easier than to contact God, who will have his own time. You know, that's what happens most of the times. But I think very beautifully and subtly, Swami would point out this flaw in us so that we would be able to rectify it. I remember one of my classmates, after he had completed his, you know, master's, he wanted to join for research. He wanted to become a research scholar in a university. He was a brilliant student, so he went and spoke to the vice chancellor, and vice chancellor was more than happy to induct him as a research scholar. He went and spoke to the head of the department, who was also very happy to have him and even guide him. So he had, you know, sorted all this out, and he had taken permission from his parents. And finally he comes to Swami, and the Swami one day asks him, so what is your plan? You finish your studies, what are you going to do? So he started telling, Swami, I've spoken to the vice chancellor, I've spoken to the HOD, and they're ready to take me for research scholars and all that. So Swami listened to him patiently, and at the end of it, Swami said, all right, I mean, if you've decided, then you can go ahead and join. And after he joined, I mean, see, it's coming purely out of the feeling that this boy wanted to stay with Swami for a little longer, you know, be in Swami's presence. The feeling was very pure, and Swami kind of blessed him. But on the day when he was joining, you know, you go up to Swami and take Swami's blessings before you join the first day. So Swami looks at him and Swami says, oh, today you're joining. And Swami asks him, and I don't know whether that boy got it, but it struck all of us who were sitting there. Swami asked him, are you happy? He said, yes, Swami, I'm very happy. Swami gave me this opportunity. Is the Vice Chancellor happy? Swami asked. He said, yes, Swami, Vice Chancellor is happy. HOD is happy? He said, yes, Swami, HOD is also happy. Then, okay, Manchiri, Swami said. Almost saying that, you know, are all of you happy? You know, you've sorted it out yourself. Are you happy? Because had you come to me, then the question is Swami happy with this? You know, I'm happy if Swami is happy. So this is what I would like. But, you know, sometimes we do that. You know, we ensure ourselves and then we pray to God, saying that, God, you know, even if you don't answer my prayer, and I've got insurance to back me.
You know, this is a very, a sensitive, a two-sided thing. It reminded me of two things. The first is a very a personal and a very, you know, beautiful memory. The kind of giving first priority to God, I feel we can put in our efforts, but ultimately it is Swami's blessings that we are able to give Him first priority.
Absolutely.
I remember when, you know, Swami blessed my, who was a girl that time, who is now my wife today, blessed her to be, you know, blessed us to get married. I remember at that time I went and told my parents, I told Pooja's parents that this is what Swami has said, everything happened. And a few days later, the security guards, they used to change every month. So at the end of the month, Swami grants them a group picture at Yajur Mandir.
Right.
So that day I had the opportunity to take the group photos, and as I took the group photos, I was wanting to know, you know, further, because this is a very important step in life, and I just wanted to ensure that my marriage in the worldly sense doesn't affect my permanent marriage with Swami, you know, because after all, he's the only one we are truly wedded to. So when Swami was going by, he asked me exactly the same thing. He said, what are parents feeling? What are your in-laws feeling? I don't know. I totally say that it is only Swami's blessings. I just told him, Swami, you leave all of them, Swami. I want to know what Swami is feeling. You know, Prem, that moment when I told that sentence, Swami almost broke down, you know, like he smiled and there was a tear almost in his eye, and he held the inside of my palm and pinched it gently. And then he said, Swami Sukshemanga, Santoshanga, Anand, you know, 3-4 words in Telugu, which meant I'm very contented, peaceful, happy, joyous. That's what Swami said. Then I said, Swami, then we are all very happy. And after Swami went in, it didn't strike me. After that only it struck me that, wow, you know, Swami, thank you so much for giving me the whatever strength, the idea, the whatever to speak the correct thing. Because finally, as you said, Prem, if Swami is happy, then everyone else is happy, right? So, what I wanted to say is, when we say that we give God first priority, I don't think it means that we sit back, we stop putting in our efforts. I feel it's more of a attitude thing. It's more of keeping constantly in mind that, you know what, the first stakeholder for me, the most important stakeholder, actually others are not stakeholders, because if God is happy, the world is automatically happy. The only stakeholder for me is God. With that attitude, if we are able to put in effort, because I don't think also Swami would like it if I say, Swami, this problem has come now, I am turning to you as the first resort, you take care, and I just sit back. So, keeping in mind that Swami is the first stakeholder, Swami is the most important stakeholder, we put in our efforts, but we, as you rightly said, we have to ensure that our efforts never conflict with the fact that Swami is the first stakeholder and we should do everything to please Him.
In fact, even as we go through these 9 paths of devotion, Shravanam, Kirtanam, we are at that, and we're going to go to Smaranam, we will see that this is actually the process which happens within each path. You know, when we said that each path can by itself be the entire journey itself, I think each path will actually include this journey of you going as a casual listener, a casual singer, a person who is casually participating in something, or, you know, turning to God when there is a need, but slowly going to the point where, you know, the priorities change and more weightage is given to Swami, to the point where all weightage is given only to Swami, and then the rest of it is like, it's just in obedience to the command rather than, you know, I would like to do this. From taking permission to, it becomes, you know, your command is what I do. I think that is what will happen. And even just like how we said in Shravanam, you know, from casually listening to, you know, dedicated listening or focused listening or whatever it is. It's the same thing with bhajans too, or kirtanam for that matter. A lot of people indulge in it just because they love music, or they, you know, it is like somebody was telling the other day, you know, a lot of these spiritual organizations which come up, which say that, you know, we'll give you peace of mind, we'll give you meditation. I mean, even if I tell you, Arvind, that, you know, you sit down and do this meditation, you will find peace, because it's meditation itself has that value.
Hmm.
So it's similarly like that, you know, there's something special about singing the glory of God. We may or may not experience it every time, but anybody, I mean, the name is so powerful. You know, when you say Rama, Krishna, Swami, say that name itself is so powerful. You be a Hindu, Christian, anybody, but each of these names actually, because, you know, thousands and millions of devotees have invested their faith and love in that name. And just taking that name actually has its own power. So many people who, you know, begin their journey with bhajans, or, you know, casually start singing bhajans, there will be an immediate recognition of that peace which, you know, descends on you when you start taking to kirtan. But from there, you journey on to that becoming a very important part of your life.
I think we have now come to the topic proper for today's satsang. It was a good summary of what we did last week and the conclusion that we arrived at as to what kirtanam is. But as we promised our listeners today, we will be focusing on the kirtanam as singing part of it. And I think we will begin after taking a little break. But before that break, Prem, we would like to thank a few of our listeners who shared their experiences with kirtanam. In fact, one possibly we can read out a beautiful experience.
Sure.
This person writes, "My sister and I joined Balvikas in the year 97 in Mettur Dam, and my parents were at that time staunch Vaishnavites. Vaishnavites are those who worship Lord Vishnu. They would encourage us to attend classes and bhajans, but our parents would not attend the same. My sister would come back from the Balvikas class and tell all the stories told in the classes. My mother would feel very happy to hear those, but didn't have any other liking towards the organization or even Swami. I even remember dragging her to Sunday bhajans, but she would often complain of a headache after the bhajans. But can you believe it? Now she cannot live without listening to bhajans or Radio Sai. Later, our house was the Samiti for 10 years in Mettur. And today we are in Port Said, Egypt, where my dad currently lives and conducts bhajans every Thursday. This is all due to Swami's grace and kirtanam. which is singing of Swami's stories and talking about his life, which has played a vital role in our lives. I just feel like sharing this experience. So, we are...
In fact, you know, as you, I mean, as you read out, this is from a listener by name is Dharini. Mm. And if I'm not wrong, the same listener had written to us a couple of months back when we had done the program on addictions, right? And she had a very interesting question to ask. She asked, what about addiction to Radio Sai? Because she was saying that, you know, listening, I mean, all our faith has actually got strengthened and crystallized because of listening to Radio Sai. And the many devotees who speak on it, the many conversations we've had, and of course the discourses which we play. So she said, you know, I mean, it's so interesting to have this feedback for Kirtanam, because this listener asked about Shravanam the last time. You know, that, you know, listening to the Lord. But that's what it's, as we said, Kirtanam involves both, you know, and so many listeners, they write to us, they say that we listen to the programs and we transcribe parts which we find interesting and share it with others. And we make clips and we share it with people. And
all that is Kirtanam,
right,
absolutely.
And we had a listener from Japan writing to us, right, that she very regularly forwards all these talks to her friends, even when she was hospitalized for a medical condition. As we said last week, all this includes Kirtanam. When you receive and you are so full with it and you want to share it with others. In fact, that idea of sharing is actually the basis of Kirtanam. We'll come to that. Swami makes that very clear in one of his discourses. But before that, as Swami would always say, you know, when you talk of Kirtanam, Swami says, Swami, when Swami speaks about Kirtanam, Swami also refers to Sankirtanam, or when you sing as a group. And Swami would say that this culture of Sankirtanam was started by none other than
Guru Nanak.
Right, and Swami would say that they would have these Guru Kirtans and readings from the Granth Sahib, which was made into songs and such things. Swami would say that he was the first person to start it. So probably as a break, before we lunge into the topic, let's have a Kirtan, the typical Guru Kirtan which the Sikhs sing. It's beautiful, I'm telling you, it's so meditative. I mean, I know some people who are from Andhra, you know, from Karnataka, who can't understand a word of Punjabi. But they just listen to this like entire day because it's so meditative. It's so beautiful, this, the way they sing it. So we'll listen to a Guru Kirtan, a Sikh Kirtan, and at the other side of that song, we'll continue the discussion.
अग्नि बिंदु जल पीतल निप जाए काहे कम पाए अग्न देव जल पीतल निप जाए काहे कम पाए काम जीने के ते पशु पाए के ते रुख बिर काम जीने के ते पशु पाए के ते नाग कुली में आए के ते पंख उड़ाए के ते नाग कुली में आए के पंख उड़ाए रे साहिबा कौन जाने तेरे रे साहिबा
Welcome back, dear listeners, and what you're listening in the background is that Sikh Kirtan, which we spoke about. There are many such in our repository. You can just search, do an audio search in our website and you'll find all those tracks. And Swami said that this was the beginning of the culture of Sankirtan as such, where, you know, everybody would join and sing together and, you know, follow or... Rather, there would be a famous song which everybody would sing together. That's how Sankirtan started, Swami says.
In fact, I think today many of our points that we are going to discuss have been taken from one particular discourse, the discourse that Bhagwan delivered on the 26th of January, 1982. And that dilates almost entirely on Sankirtan and the different forms of Sankirtan. When we read that, it reminds you why Swami again and again sang this as his favorite bhajan. Bhajan bina sukha shanti nahi. Imagine his favorite bhajan. Definitely it can be considered like his favorite because if we see it in terms of statistical numbers, I think Prema Mujhse Manase Kaho and Bhajan bina sukha shanti nahi, both are the bhajans which he has sung for the maximum number of times. And while in Prema Mujhse Manase Kaho you have Rama 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 Rama, the Nama Sankirtana repeating. Bhajan bina, this is a bhajan about the glory of a bhajan. You know, it's a bhajan that is exhorting people to sing bhajans. So therefore, I don't think we can anytime overemphasize the importance of singing the glory of the Lord together or Sankirtanam. And we have made this analogy also, we have also brought up this analogy before many times about how Sankirtana is like multiple cars on a highway on a dark night. Even if one of the car's headlights fail, there is enough light because of the light from the other cars. That is the advantage of Sankirtana, that is group singing over individual singing. Because when you do individual singing, every time you have to be in that elevated state. While in group singing, the elevated states of others can rub off to you, rub on to you, and you can benefit from group singing. So that is Sankirtanam. And in this discourse, Bhagwan categorizes Sankirtana into four main forms. That is Guna Sankirtana, Leela Sankirtana, Bhava Sankirtana, and Nama Sankirtana. I think we will delve into the depths of these as Bhagwan has done in the discourse.
Right. On another occasion when Swami is speaking about Sankirtan as such, Swami made this point where he said devotion is of two types. You know, one thing is when you go after knowledge, when you want to explore God, explore yourself. And that is definitely one form of devotion where you know the goal and you walk towards it. Swami said, but the problem with that is you're only concerned about yourself in that. You know, you want to progress. The idea that, you know, when you start your journey with the feeling that after all, in the end, there is only one, there is a possibility that you'll only be thinking about the one, right? You will not be thinking of the person next to you as the other. Hmm. And when you don't think of the person next to you as the other, sometimes you know, compassion is not forthcoming. And Swami would say that the second type of devotion is when you say that, you know, I want to progress towards God, but I also want to help others progress towards God. And Swami said that is where Kirtan, Sankirtan comes. And another very beautiful analogy which Swami would very often say is, when you want a lamp, you have one lamp and you want to light the inside of the house and the outside of the house, you keep the lamp on the threshold. You know, the house inside is lit, and the portico where the people would walk around the road, even that gets lit.
Mm.
And Swami said that is how it is when you sing the name of the Lord. Because the name is on the lips now, it benefits the person who is on the inside of the lip, and it also benefits the people who are around, you know, who listen through it, listen to the song. And that's why Sankirtan is important. And as you said, that Sankirtan Swami categorizes in these different forms.
So, the first thing that Swami speaks about is Guna Sankirtana. Swami says Guna Sankirtana is the singing of the qualities of the Lord. You know, where you highlight the different aspects of the Lord as an ocean of compassion or, you know, the different virtues, different forms of God have different characteristics. For example, Shiva is called Trishuladhari, and Ganesha is called Gajanana, one with the head of an elephant. Rama is called Kodandapani, one who holds the Kodanda bow. So, this is Guna Sankirtana. And I think before we go deeper into Guna Sankirtana, we can just listen to one bhajan probably just one speed of that bhajan, to understand better what Guna Sankirtana is. And dear listeners, while we listen to this bhajan, why not join in the bhajan also and enjoy singing that and participate in Guna Sankirtana.
Jaya Jaya Rama, Jaya Raghu Rama, Dasharatha Nandana Raja Rama. Jay Jay Rama, Jay Raghu Rama, Dasharatha Nandana Raja Rama. Abhay Pradayaka, Anandadayaka, Abhay Pradayaka, Anandadayaka, Tribhuvana Mohan Sita Rama. Tribhuvana Mohan Sita Rama.
So that is an example of a Guna Sankirtan, and as you listen to it, listeners, you know that where there's a description of the Lord, you know, it could be a description of a form of the Lord, sometimes, you know, saying that Ganga Dhari or so and so, or by saying that, you know, Karuna Sagara, or whatever is the aspect of the Lord that you would like to describe. You know, that's where Guna means attribute. An attribute of the Lord, saying that Prema Swarupa or, you know, Dharma Swarupa, all of those things come under Guna Sankirtan.
You know, when you think of gunas or qualities, why not focus on the good ones? In fact, why focus on the good ones? Why not focus on the God ones, the divine ones? That is the spirit of Guna Sankirtan, I feel. You know, there is quite a lot of documented evidence about this Professor Masaru Emoto from Japan, where he said, you know, love to some rice and that rice didn't get spoiled, and where there was hate written, the rice got spoiled. You know, interestingly, when I was reading all this, there's a lot of criticism of these experiments, you know, saying that this is all scientific nonsense, it has not been done scientifically. There's a huge amount of critique against Dr. Masaru Emoto. So when you read, it gets confusing. So I say, leave all that. Just let us think of our own selves, you know. Imagine you being spoken to by a person who always highlights, your positives, vis-a-vis another person who speaks with you highlighting only your negatives. One who criticizes and one who praises. And when I say praise here, I'm not meaning about flattery kind of praise, but identifying your strengths. That's what I mean by praise. And when I say criticism here, I'm not meaning scolding or putting you down, but I mean identifying your weaknesses. Though both are important for us in life, you know, very often it has been identified even in, for example, things like parenting, when you bring up a child, that rather than point out the mistakes and tell a child to correct or point. Same thing, even coaching, cricket coaching or singing coaching, always focus on the strengths. So, whether Professor Masaru Emoto's, because of the recency effect, this is coming, because when I was reading up, I saw a lot of critique. So, whether Professor Masaru Emoto's experiments hold water or not, our practical day-to-day experience shows that rather than focusing on the negatives, when we are able to focus on the positives, we are able to achieve the same thing in a much more wonderful manner with much more wonderful feeling. And therefore, I think that is the basis kind of in singing the gunas of the Lord. Because if just positive thoughts and noble thoughts and good thoughts can make us feel so good, then imagine godly thoughts, godly feelings and godly qualities. It definitely makes us aspire, aim for the stars, so that even if we don't hit the stars, we at least hit the roof of a building.
The thing is, when you're saying the glory of the Lord, I think people might wonder, you know, none of us sing the negatives of the Lord. We all sing the positives of the Lord. You know, who is there who says that, you know, you're the one whose anger will destroy me? You know, none of us pray like that. But actually, there is a subtle way in which we end up talking actually the negative aspect of the Lord, which we superimpose on Him. You know, it's not that it's there. For instance, somebody was saying, you know, most of our listeners, and I think even you'll be aware of that documentary on Secret. You know, there is a documentary which emphasizes the importance of positive reinforcement, where they say that if you want to achieve something, you constantly think that you've already achieved it, instead of saying that, oh, I don't have it, which means you're kind of giving more energy to
the feeling of lack,
the feeling of not having it, rather than the feeling of having it. So they say if you want to become a tennis superstar, you keep imagining, and as much as possible, keep images around you which reinforce the idea that one day you've already become a tennis star. If you kind of bring that same idea into bhajans, when we go on singing, oh daya karo, oh kripa karo, I mean, you are telling that, you know, you give me compassion, which means without your knowledge, you're giving energy to the idea that I don't have your compassion, now you give me compassion. So instead of saying, you know, Karuna Sagara, is saying that, oh, you are the ocean of compassion, you're saying that give me compassion. Which means right now, boss, you're not giving me compassion. Now you give me compassion. See, though you're actually not, you know, praising the negative, you are actually giving energy to the absence of you know, the compassion not being forthcoming.
In fact, I remember, excuse me, there was this devotee in Mumbai when I was there in the Balvikas. This devotee was saying that there's this line in this bhajan, you know, that Shirdi Sai Dwarkama. In that bhajan, there's one line, Daya Karo, Krupa Karo, Raksha Karo, He Sai Ram. That one, no? This devotee said that I don't want to sing it like that. He sings it as Daya Nidhe, Krupa Nidhe, Prema Swarupa Sai Ram. And years ago, this is exactly the same, you know, statement or argument he gave. He said, when I am saying daya karo, krupa karo, it means as if Swami is not showering daya and compassion on. No. He is doing it in abundance. That's why I want to sing as daya nidhe, meaning ocean of compassion. Krupa nidhe, ocean of krupa. But you know, Prem, though this is definitely a step higher, what Bhagwan tells in his discourse on that day is even more higher. He says Guna Sankirtana is not recommended as the ultimate because what are you trying to do in Guna Sankirtana? You are trying to ascribe attributes to the one who is Gunatita or one who is beyond attributes. And so Swami says that though it helps grow in understanding, Guna Sankirtana can give you only momentary satisfaction. Because once you bring in these qualities, just as you said, when you say Daya Karo, Krupa Karo, a person who is getting introduced, if he sings, he or she will get the feeling that it's only when you seek for Daya and Krupa you will get it. So possibly somebody who is doing well is seeking properly, and possibly I am not seeking properly. Possibly God doesn't like me, God has favorites. All these thoughts, I'm sure with respect to Swami, we all have had these kind of thoughts. That Swami likes someone better than the other. Possibly someone is more blessed, someone is less blessed. All this we feel, which is all wrong, but we feel only because of we trying to give attributes to Swami. Which doesn't make sense because Swami says, God is Gunatita, who is beyond all qualities. And as Swami has rightly said in this discourse, when we go to Guna Sankirtana, definitely we get peace, we get joy. But as Swami says, it's only momentary, the satisfaction is only momentary. Soon doubts will come in and they will start harassing you and they will drive the peace right out of you.
And when people might ask that if singing Daya Karo is not the right thing to do, why do we have that in bhajans and why Swami didn't take it off? Because as you said, you know, see, the Sankirtan is not supposed to be exclusive. It does not say that unless you come to this idea of God being Gunatita, you can't sing bhajans. You know, it's meant for everybody. There is somebody who can relate to that feeling of saying that, oh God, why didn't you come and help me? You know, if you can relate to it, I mean, why not start with there, if not, you know, straightaway start from that point of Gunatita. But as we're saying that, you know, when you talk of gunas, you're talking about superimposing gunas on somebody who does not have attributes. And those gunas are invariably the way you look at God. You know, when you say that, as you said, you know, unless I plead, Swami is not going to come and help me. Because that is an idea which, as an authority, as a boss, probably I will not go and help a subordinate without being asked. You know, so we kind of superimpose that attribute on God.
It's a way of relating.
Right, it's a way of relating. You know, the buffalo thinks of God as a cosmic buffalo, as it is said. So we start by doing Guna Sankirtana because we start by relating to God from our level, which is not bad, which is not wrong. At the same time, that's not the ultimate. That's what Swami says, that you are referring to the Lord who is Gunatita. So how can you, you know, cage him in this Guna Sankirtana of yours?
And that brings us to the next, which is Leela Sankirtana. In Leela Sankirtana, what Swami says is, you sing about the Leelas of the Lord, the acts of the Lord, the phenomenal things that He has done. Krishna has lifted the Govardhana Giri. So Govardhana Giri Dhari you sing. And Shiva has drunk the Alahala poison. So we sing that, Alahala Dhara Shambho. So where we describe the acts and Leelas of compassion, of mercy, of love of the Lord, that is Leela Sankirtana. And like we did with Guna Sankirtana, before we go into Leela Sankirtana, we listen to a bhajan which is based on this and we join in this bhajan.
Nandalala, he Vrajabala. Nandalala, he Vrajabala. Makhan chora. Yashoda ke bala Makhan chora Yashoda ke bala Brindavan ke Gokul bala Yashoda ke bala Makhan chora Yashoda ke bala He Nandalala He Vrajabala
That was the bhajan again, Makhan Chora in Yashoda Ke Bala. And I think we've mentioned this in one of the satsangs before. Why does the Lord have to come down in a human form and do different things? You know, The same cancer, Swami, is cured in so many ways. For somebody, it's, you know, just a vibhuti. For somebody, it's just a word. For somebody, it's just a look. For somebody, it's a surgical procedure, you know, in their sleep. That's the variety which Swami has done. And why the Lord comes time and again and does this is for this very purpose. You know, when you do kirtan, when you sing the kirti of the Lord, you have so many options, you know, so many ways to describe the Lord's leelas.
You know, talking of leela sankirtan, I was just reminded of what, you know, my brother Amay has said, you know. It was so fantastic. He was narrating about childhood heroes. We all have childhood heroes. And they can be different people, you know. For some, Sachin Tendulkar is a childhood hero, a cricketer. For some, a baseball player might be a basketball player in the field of sports. If you go even more childhood, possibly you have childhood heroes like Batman, Superman. Today it is possibly Iron Man, and you know, there are so many superheroes that are cropping up, and not only they become your heroes, you can see this, you can see yourself even modeling along the lines of that character, you know. Because I have seen a lot of kids. Recently also I saw a couple of kids. They jump from the window pressing the palm of their hand with their middle finger. Like as if they are ejecting webs. Mm-hmm. Like Spider-Man. There are some others who want... In India, for example, you have this Krish. That Krish mask. Krish is a Bollywood created superhero, and he comes with a particular mask, and those masks have become a huge merchandise. Huge merchandising industry exists along all these superheroes, right?
Not even spread Bheem.
Yes, Chota Bheem. You've got Chota Bheem coming up with all kinds of fictitious stories. When the actual stories themselves are so inspiring, right, you just let go of them and make fictitious stories. Why I said this? Brother Amay told me that, you know, more than God or anything else, for me, Swami was my childhood icon. He was my childhood hero. And I was really amazed as he went on to describe. He said, whether you believe it or not, in the afternoon as everybody slept, I would slowly open the door. Why? I would slowly open because that's how I had seen my Swami open the interview room door. and I'll slowly peep out. And then when I walk out, he said that he would hold up his pant from the at the knee area, just the way Swami would hold up his robe. And he would walk, swaying his hand as if he is giving darshan. You know, definitely it was not Brother Amai enacting like another Sukshma Baba or Subtle Baba that we see today. But Brother Amai was saying that he was so enamored by Swami. And just like a child would imitate Superman up and away, or Spider-Man ejecting webs or anything like that, he would feel like, you know, modeling along Swami. He would feel like Swami is my superhero. And therefore he said that I loved everything about Swami. The way he walked, the way he talked, the way he would scold, the way he would make his eyes big, the way he would adjust his hair. You know, it became so wonderful. And therefore I made him my superhero. And what I feel is, by Leela Sankirtana, it is one way of making God your own superhero. Because all said and done, Prem, any other superhero is worthy of emulation probably in only certain aspects. You know, whether it's a Superman or a Batman. Because if we go in, when the details of those characters come, they have their own history, which is probably not so good. Or even if you take a sports person, for example, I hero worship Sachin Tendulkar. But you know, my hero worship should be restricted to only the way he bats. Because that's what I love about him, the way he plays his cricket. But the danger in hero worshipping is, when I hero worship Sachin Tendulkar, I suddenly begin to like the kind of t-shirts he wears, the kind of drinks that he takes, whether it's a cool drink or a sports drink, the kind of shoes he wears. Isn't that the reason why these people become highly paid commercial entities, advertising for different bikes, cars, and or everything else? Because the world knows that when you make somebody your hero, you start emulating him or her for everything else also, not only for just the field in which they became your hero. So that is a real danger. Because just because Sachin Tendulkar is a great batsman doesn't mean that the shoes he decides to wear are the best for me. But I decided because Sachin Tendulkar is my hero. So when such dangers exist, why not make hero of the one who is perfect? Because if you want to emulate Swami in any way. It's perfect. It's beautiful. Whether the way he talks, whether in his body, in his mind, in the spirit that he embodies, in anything you say, Swami is an idol. Swami is an ideal. Swami is an icon. So I feel in that sense, this Leela Sankirtana is useful, because if at all you want to hero worship, if at all you want to talk about the acts of somebody, if you want to talk about what a person does, what a person speaks, because Leelas are that only. Why do it of anybody else? Why talk about what Superman is doing or Batman is doing? Why not do it about the Lord? I feel that is where Leela Sankirtanam comes in, where it makes the Lord your hero, your role model, or your icon.
There is another reason why, you know, this Leela Sankirtan is very, very important, because, you know, all said and done, as devotees, we go, you know, there is some sort of succor we seek from the Lord, some sort of relief from anything. You know, for all said and done, a lot of people come to God for two reasons, you know, for relief from pain and suffering. And the second, which is very subtle, is for decision making. You know, a lot of people come to Swami, you know, should my son stay here, or should he go abroad, should he get married to this person or that person, you know, should I invest in this business or not, or should I chant this mantra or that, you know, because we know that life is filled with so many choices, but many of us come to Swami actually for, you know, choice making. Really, that's one of the key things which is important. So in many ways, when we come to the Lord, you know, there is a certain sense of protection we seek from the Lord. Mm-hmm. So when we do Leela Sankirtan, what you're doing is you're reinforcing that idea that, you know, there is no problem I can face in my life.
I can't face in my life, huh?
Right. I can face in my life, which is bigger than he can solve.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. Uh-huh.
So that is why when you go on reminding yourself of the Leelas, you know, there is this Lord who lifted the Govardhana with his, you know, little finger. As a 6-year-old kid, he fights this serpent, and, you know, as a 10-year-old lad, he kills his uncle who's a wrestler. You go on, you're putting these ideas into your head, you know, because of his one word, the monkey could cross the ocean. You are re-emphasizing the might of the Lord you're praying to. And that is why the Leela Sankirtan is so important. And you know that, you know, in the process of doing this Leela Sankirtan, you are actually telling yourself that the life I'm leading is actually a part of his Leela. And the Swami says that, you know, when we spoke about Kirtanam last time, the ability to see everything that's happening in your life as a Leela, either a completed Leela or a work in progress. That is what Leela Sankirtan offers you to do, but as Swami very beautifully says in this discourse, the problem with that is, you know, you are still in that duality of good and bad.
Correct.
You're still, you know, evaluating, does this qualify as a Leela or as a failure? Sometimes Swami says that it could lead to a certain amount of disillusionment when you're not able to see something which is happening in your life as a Leela.
You know, Swami in a discourse says God, G-O-D, stands for generation, which is Srishti, that is creation. O is for organization or sthiti, which is preservation, and D is destruction or laya. Srishti, sthiti, laya.
Right.
And Swami says the entire universe is about creation, sustenance and destruction. And in this universe, everything that is happening is a Leela of the Lord. So therefore, though the ideal goal of Leela Sankirtanam is where you are able to recognize everything that is happening around you as the will of the Lord, that is true surrender also. But if that doesn't happen, then Leela Sankirtanam would have failed in its ultimate objective. And Swami says, because we are so immersed in duality, more often than not, it fails to happen. We consider compassion as a Leela, but the Lord's anger, we don't consider it as a Leela. In the sense when I don't think it is, I'll never say that, you know, Bhagwan's glory, Swami, how angry he got, you know. I don't think, I feel, oh, that is something that we should forget, because Swami's Leelas will be his love, his compassion, saving of a patient.
As long as it is turned away from us, it's okay. Mahishasura Mardini is fine.
Yes, good.
It's a demon
who is being annihilated.
Right.
Yes. And also, you know, even in terms like, I come with a medical problem, if Swami cures that cancer, then it's a miracle that I tell. We had also discussed this, you know, for every cancer that Swami has cured, there are hundreds of other cancers that Swami has not cured. And we don't speak about it. And let's be honest, why we don't speak about it? Because we feel, come on, what's there in that? I mean, that is something that didn't happen. But if we are living in the true spirit of Leela Sankirtan, then whether the cancer is cured or not, both are Leelas. Both are equally profound, equally authentic, equally Swami Leelas. But because of our duality, we differentiate, and Swami says, that is a problem that comes in Leela, because you cannot isolate something as Leela and something as not a Leela. But that is what we constantly do, because we don't have equanimity, we don't have surrender. And therefore Swami says, Leela Sankirtana too has its pitfalls. And then he moves on to the third, which is Bhava Sankirtana. Bhava Sankirtana is where you express a feeling, whether it is peace or whether it is joy, whether it is sorrow or whatever, rather than talking about the acts of the Lord or the qualities of the Lord, you just express your feeling towards the Lord. You know, the daya karo, what we said about.
Right. Fits more into Bhava Sankirtana.
Yeah, that line fits into Bhava Sankirtana, though the rest of the bhajan was kind of Leela Sankirtana. If we see Swami's bhajan, there's all variety. You know, we have bhajan which is a mixture of all the three. Guna Sankirtana, Leela Sankirtana and Bhava Sankirtana. In fact, these are common questions that are asked in the Antakshari quiz that is conducted to the students, to name a bhajan which is a combination of these two or a mix of all three or which is only one. So there are bhajans of all variety, and here we have one bhajan again which we can follow and enjoy, which comes possibly under Bhava Sankirtana.
Sai Ram, Sai Sham, Vere Sai Ram. Sai Ram, Sai Sham, Vere Sai Ram. Mere Sai, Mere Baba, मेरे प्राण नाथ राम। मेरे साई मेरे बाबा मेरे प्राण नाथ राम। साई राम साई श्याम मेरे साई राम। मुझे शांति दो भगवान, मेरे जीवन में साथ रहो साई नाथ हे। मेरे जीवन में साथ रहो साई नाथ हे।
सो दैट तेरे द्वार पे मैं आऊं मुझे शांति दो भगवान। ओ लॉर्ड आई हैव कम एट योर डोरस्टेप प्लीज गिव मी पीस। This is where you're expressing your feelings. You can express all kinds. You know, there are happy, there are sad, there are very poignant bhajans. All these are there. Swami, however, classifies Bhava Sankirtana into...
It's the feeling with which you sing and the feeling with which you relate to the Lord too.
Correct.
That, you know, either painfully seeking deliverance or saying that, you know, I'm so happy to have found you. You're my father, you're my mother, that kind of a thing. I think any way in which you relate to God, with what feeling you relate, I think...
That's what is the meaning of Bhava. Right. You know, before we... again, here Swami goes into the different kinds of Bhava Sankirtana. And in the different kinds also, he says what is the pitfall of each of these. As a general thought itself, we can see, because Bhava, feeling, is... often confused with emotion, and emotion is ephemeral and transient, and it's not true. While doing Ramkatha Rasa Vahini also, we realized how Rama tells Sugriva that, Sugriva, this is not devotion, this is emotion. You know, you are offering yourself entirely to me, not out of devotion, but out of emotion. Because emotion and devotion both seem same in the intensity, but while devotion perseveres and it lasts forever, emotion fizzles out, fades out very soon, because the next moment the emotion can be different. So, bhava, when it gets confused with emotion, it leads to something that is not satisfying permanently once again, just like the other sankirtanas. So Swami says, one bhava sankirtana is shanta bhava. Shanta bhava. Shanta means the serene, a kind of serene feeling, a feeling of equanimity. And the example for this kind of Shanta Bhakti, often quoted, is the grandsire of the Pandavas and Kauravas, Bhishma. It was his equanimity that, though he could choose whenever he wanted to die, he chose his death at a certain point in time in order to ensure that Dharma has victory. There's not enough time to go into the details of his story, but he happened to be on the side of Adharma, because of fate, as he calls it. And he chose to equanimously give up his life. But even after he fell on the bed of arrows, you know, there's the entire Shanti Parva in the Mahabharata where Krishna advises the Pandavas to go and seek blessings and guidance from Bhishma. After that whole thing gets over, he decides to give up his body in the holy Uttarayanam time. So this kind of equanimity is, when you express equanimity through your devotion, that is called Shanta Bhakti.
Actually, what happens is, you know, Shanta Bhakti is, in a sense, when you don't have anything to seek from the Lord, when you feel fulfilled, I mean, that's when you're equanimous, you know, you don't have any perturbations in your mind. Hmm. But Swami says the pitfall with this is, you know, what happened with Bhishma himself, where he does not need anything, but, you know, when he is dying, he says, I want to choose to die in Uttarayanam because Uttarayanam is a good time to die. You know, Swami says that, you know, at some point the desire will come and you will feel a sense of, I don't need God for this. You know, I can do it myself. And that was a mistake which Bhishma did, that he thought that he had nothing to seek. But even he had a desire that, you know, dying at this time is better than dying at any other time. So let's choose to die. You know, that there is that pitfall which comes even with Shanta Bhakti.
And if Bhishma could fall into that pit, it is highly probable that any one of us could also have that pitfall. And the second one Swami kind of says is Sakya Bhakti,
right.
Sakya Bhavam. Sakya meaning friendship.
Friendship.
The kind that Arjuna enjoyed with Lord Krishna. So, on the face, we can see what happens when you have friendship with the Lord, and Swami has exhorted any number of times to all of us that you should have friendship with the Lord, only with the Lord. In fact, later on during this Navvida Bhakti also, Sakhyam or Sneham is the penultimate form of worship, and we will be discussing that in great detail. But I think again, Sakhyam as the form of worship is different from Sakya Bhava again, because Sakya Bhava is just the emotion of a friend. As Swami explained, there is a pitfall even in this, and that is a pitfall that Arjuna suffered, though he had Sakya Bhava.
Right. In fact, in one of the discourses, Swami clearly explains that Krishna tells Arjuna in the Gita, you know, I am keeping you at a distance. You don't look at me from the point of view as, you know, I am devoted to you, so that you don't become too distant from me. At the same time, I want you to always remember that I am divine. Because that is when you will actually take seriously whatever I say.
Hmm.
In fact, here where Swami speaks about the pitfall of Sakya Bhava, the problem is that, you know, when you think that he's my God, he's my friend, you might tend to take him lightly, you might tend to take his words lightly. Swami said that is a problem. You know, you do nothing wrong in relating to God in the way of a friend, but always remember that he is divine. You know, there is nothing that he says or does is without a purpose.
In fact, Swami goes on to say that though Krishna was like a friend, Arjuna more often than not called him as Bhava, because he remembered the worldly relation more than the divine friendship. So, and such a kind of forgetfulness, as you said, happens because of the comfort that comes from friendship, and that is what we have to be aware of. And the third bhava that Swami describes is the Dasya Bhava. Again, another form of devotion that comes in the Navveda Bhakti Marga. It's interesting to see that paths in the Bhakti Marga are coming as different bhavas as part of the Bhava Sankirtana, because it becomes very, very strong and clear that Swami wants to differentiate those paths from the emotion that is a byproduct of that path. Dasya Bhakti is different from Dasya Bhava. Similarly, Sakya Bhakti is different from Sakya Bhava, because bhakti or devotion is permanent and perpetual and continuous compared to bhava or emotion. Emotion and devotion is different, and that's why while Dasya Bhava is prominent in Hanuman, Swami said that even Hanuman had one defect, you know. That is amazing. If Hanuman could have possibly have a defect in devotion, it makes us wonder what it is. But Swami says that though Hanuman is the ideal for Dasya Bhakti, because of the Dasya Bhava, that is the emotion of a servant, the devotion of a servant is what makes him the ideal for Dasya Bhakti. But the emotion of a servant is what makes us aware to another possible pitfall that Hanuman faced in his life.
Right, as Swami says, the problem which Hanuman faced was that he could not accept God in any other form. He was so devoted to that form of Lord Rama. He said that even the same Lord came with a different set of attributes, not only different set of form, because we've spoken of it many times before, how different the personality of Krishna was from the personality of Rama.
Hmm.
You know, that Maryada Purushottam that Rama was, and here was this Leeladhari Krishna.
Hmm.
And his inability to accept this Lord in this new form, you know, in this different, totally refreshing form that he came in. He said, no, I can't have that feeling of dasyam to this form of Krishna. Swami says that is a pitfall that too much of attachment to a particular form, even in the form of dasyam.
I think all of us, whether we have dasyam or not, we have this problem which we suffer from. And then the next bhava that Swami speaks about is the vatsalya bhava, or the feeling of motherhood, the kind of love towards God that Mother Yashoda had, Mother Devaki had, Mother Ishwaramma has had. You know, we can bring out all this vatsalya bhava, the feeling of mothering the divine child. And though it is wonderful and beautiful, the problem that Swami says that comes from this is the seeking of exclusivity. And we have seen this happening always, where even Swami has narrated about instances from the life of Mother Ishwaramma also, where Swami's divinity is forgotten because he is her son. Where Krishna's divinity is forgotten by Yashoda because she considers him as her son. So being mother of God is a great blessing, it's wonderful, no doubt. But again, it's a bhava. The emotion of motherhood can possibly actually take you away from God, because here you are seeking exclusivity, while the Lord is all inclusive. You can't have exclusivity like that with Him. So this is the problem with Vatsalya Bhakti.
And Rami says the fifth path is called Anuraga Bhava or Anuraga Bhakti. And this again is the sense of, you know, the feeling of the beloved. You know, the Lord is my beloved, which Meera had, which the Gopikas enjoyed. And we had a devotee, Andal, you know, she's supposed to have looked up to the Lord as, you know, my lover, my beloved, my spouse. That kind of a feeling. And again, Swami says that also is a feeling which kind of limits the Lord, because you are, you know, when you have to have this sort of a relationship with the Lord, you are again containing the Lord in a certain, form, in a certain age probably. Or, you know, you can't have, I mean, Swami would say that, can you think of Gopika as being devoted to Lord Narasimha, maybe? Like, you know, can you have that kind of a, you know, he's my beloved feeling towards Lord Narasimha, or even towards Lord Vamana, let's say. So even this actually constricts your relationship with the Lord, because you are showing that emotion towards one particular form of the Lord. And even the Gopikas could relate to only, you know, Krishna as the Gopala. Not Krishna as the king of Mathura, the kingmaker of Mathura, or the charioteer of the great warrior Arjuna. They could only relate to Krishna as that our Gopala, our, you know, neighborhood boy. And that is the problem with Anuraga Bhakti.
Anuraga Bhava. These terms are used interchangeably, but when we go through Swami's discourse, we realize that there's a world of difference, because Bhava is again emotion and Bhakti is devotion. Finally, there's the Madhura Bhava. And you know what, whomever is given as the example of that bhava is also given as an example of that bhakti. Arjuna is Sakya Bhakti, but he is also Sakya Bhava. Just as the Gopikas are Anuraga Bhakti and Anuraga Bhava. The final one Swami says is Madhura Bhava, which was epitomized by Radha.
Swami says the only example.
The only example of Madhura Bhakti. That itself is a great pedestal for Radha to be placed on. But the truth is that any thing or any place, any time, anything would remind Radha of Krishna. That is a kind of Anuraga Bhava, Madhura Bhava,
Madhura,
where everything reminds you of your Lord. But Swami says there also, when it remains as an emotion, the problem comes, because you still feel the duality, you feel the separation from the Lord. Because anything and everything reminds you of the Lord, but you still need that anything or everything to remind you of the Lord, because you don't consider yourself as one with the Lord. It's still a separate, and therefore that is a problem with the Madhura Bhava also.
Problem with any of these things, as we have gone through it, you know, the Bhava Sankirtan, the problem is you need an emotional reason to connect to the Lord. It's almost like that. Like Swami would say that Mother Kunti comes and prays, you know, give me always problems. Because she sees that only when I'm in problem, I'm thinking of you. Because you need a bhavam to connect to the Lord. You mean you are not a devotee left alone. You know, a devotee is a devotee in a crowd or in solitude or anyway. But here we are seeing that, you know, we look at our own lives and we say, Swami, when I have problems, I think of you, so give me problems. Swami, when I'm happiest, I think of you, so give me more happiness. Or you seek a by-lane or a reason to actually think of the Lord. And I think that's why Bhava Sankirtan falls short in many ways, because you are looking at a emotion, a feeling, a reason to turn to the Lord.
And dear listeners, as we are discussing this, when we speak from Swami's perspective and Swami's point of view, that is from perfection. Though Swami says that there are inherent defects in all these, I feel whether it's Nama Sankirtan, Leela Sankirtan or Bhava Sankirtan, for the stage that most of us are in,
we don't have
they
to worry.
More than enough. We need not worry about these fine tunings.
We have enough flaws to handle before we come to that final flaw of that one particular bhava.
Exactly. You know, it's like when you're making a cake, if you're worried about how round the cherry should be, that is something that you worry about when you have the cake, the icing, everything in perfect order. When you have not yet made the cake batter, what are you concerned about the cherry? We can think about the cherry when we come to that. So therefore, it's not as if me and Prem are now elevating ourselves to a level and saying that all these are, Hanuman is no good, Arjuna is no good. You know, we are just paraphrasing or trying to just share what Bhagwan has said in this discourse from the point of view of perfection. So, it doesn't mean that it's like discouraging any of these. These are highly recommended for any of us, but we should know that even when we reach the heights of that, it is not the ultimate, because we still have to proceed, as Swami has said. There are inherent defects in all these. The kind of Sankirtan which Swami highly recommends and says is the best for anybody, anytime, especially in the Kali Yuga, is what is the fourth kind. We finished Guna Sankirtana, we finished Leela Sankirtana, we finished Bhava Sankirtana, under which we discussed the six subcategories. The fourth kind of Sankirtana is the Nama Sankirtana, or the name of the Lord. And Swami says this is the best. We have heard it enough number of times where Hari Nama Kirtana is Kali Yuga Sadhana, Sai Nama Kirtana is the Kali Yuga Sadhana, Namasmarana is the best way in Kali Yuga. So before we go into a few words about this kind of Sankirtana, let's listen to this bhajan in Bhagwan's own voice, a Nama Sankirtana.
Govinda Krishna Vithale,
And that was Swami himself leading the Namasankirtan. And even as we speak about Namasankirtan, we have this problem or issue of straying into the next path, which is Namasmarana. And there is a very subtle difference between Namasankirtan and Namasmarana. We'll deal with that when we come to there. But again, Swami speaks about Namasankirtan as the highest form of Sankirtan. In fact, this Swami would say so many times, especially to the bhajan boys, Swami would prefer that they sing bhajans which are actually a string of the names of the Lord rather than a Hindi bhajan or, you know, a bhajan which expresses a feeling with a meaning in the sentence.
Mm.
Because many times you would wonder, you know, when there is a bhajan which is sung in a Hindi or in a language, it's so easy to relate to, because there is, many of us look at prayer, look at bhajan as a dialogue with God. And when there is a sentence, you know, which is, there is a lyric to it, then you kind of relate to it. But Swami was very particular that, you know, it should be more of Namasankirtan than of Bhava Sankirtan.
You know, in conclusion, Prem, because in conclusion, in terms of not that we have thoroughly exhausted the topic, but in terms of our time, I'm just thinking that the reason why Swami could have said this, and I totally, this is my humble submission, that's all, could possibly be like this. You know, if you sing a Hindi bhajan which has a meaning, only those who understand Hindi will understand it.
We have innumerable examples of people taking the wrong meaning because they don't understand the language completely.
That is one thing, or wrong pronunciation coming in. You leave that apart. Of course, if you take the names of the Lord, for example, in this bhajan that Swami sang, how many of us know the meaning of Govinda, know the meaning of Krishna, know the meaning of Vithala? We don't know the meaning. So, for a person who doesn't know the meaning of either, I think it makes more sense to chant these names, because I feel the names of the Lord, no, are like some trusted brands, I feel. These are brands that have delivered value over the years, have always delighted the customer who has taken it. And so therefore, I need not know actually what the brand stands for. You know, whether I'm buying a computer or whether I'm buying a soap or whether I'm, if I go, or whether I'm buying a car, when I go for a trusted brand name and tell that brand name, I need not know about how they manufacture, what they do, nothing. Because for the people who matter, they know what that brand means, and I get the brand. And though I don't know what the brand stands for, though I don't know what is their company policy, though I don't know anything, I still enjoy all the benefits of the brand. And I feel the name of the Lord, the Nama is like the brand. While any other thing, no, is like trying to describe. It's like trying to tell, I want a car that is like this, like this, like this, like this, or like this, or like this, or like that. Instead of that, possibly I just go and tell, I want a Rolls Royce. You know? And when I tell a Rolls Royce, everything about, you know, you get to know, oh, that means this is the best he wanted, the best. Rolls Royce means so much. I myself may not know what it means. But when I say I want a Rolls Royce and I get a Rolls Royce, I get fantastic. Rather than trying to describe this. So I feel it's like that. Rather than trying to tell, you know, I want some compassion, I want love, I want this, I want the person who carried a whole mountain to carry my mountain of worry. Instead of all that, you just take the brand name. And I feel the Lord's name is like the brand name. And that's why possibly it is the best and highest form of Sankirtana. This is just the analogy that came in my mind.
It's a very beautiful way of looking at it. Because, you know, when you talk about Kirtan, we said, you know, Kirtan is like a natural extension of Shravanam. You know, when you listen, when I hear you narrating stories, I want the same joy of, you know, repeating it. I hear it from you, I go and tell somebody. So Kirtanam is actually a way of expressing or living through the same joy with somebody who did, you know, when I was doing Shravanam, somebody was doing the Kirtanam, to repeat that joy of that person. In fact, Swami would say that when you talk of Shravanam, the example of Shravanam is Parikshit. The example of Kirtanam is actually Sukha Maharishi, Swami says. The person who narrated the story to, you know, Parikshit.
So, Shravanam Kirtanam is like a lofty combo.
So, in that way, if you look at it, you know, I have done the Shravanam. Somebody has sung the name of the Lord. Let us say I have heard Tyagaraja sing the Lord's name. I have heard him sing the name. Now, I want to take his role. I want to do the Kirtanam so that somebody else can do the Shravanam. So, in a way, I am actually idealizing the person who gave me that joy. So, now when you say that I am taking the name of the Lord, like when I say Vitala, 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 I am actually playing the role of Tukaram probably. You know, Tukaram took this name. I don't know what it means. I don't know what it stands for. I have not even seen that form in Pandharpur. But Tukaram, you know, when I look at him, when I hear his story, he went into raptures taking the name of Vitala. So let me also take the name of Vitala and, you know, feel that same emotion which Tukaram felt. Let me sing the name of Rama and feel the same emotion which Tyagaraja felt. Or for that matter, you know, Giridhari and feel what Meera felt.
So, dear listeners, that brings us to the close of our satsang on Kirtanam. As I submitted earlier, it is not as if we have completely and comprehensively covered the topic, but with prayers to Swami, with our gratitude to Him, whatever He inspired, whatever came through the heart has come through. You can definitely write to us your thoughts, your feelings, your experiences. We would love to read them. We would love to share them in the apt places in different satsangs. You can write to us at listener@radiosai.org. With that, we come to the close of Kirtanam, and the next fortnight is the Ramkatha fortnight, after which we will resume again from the next fortnight on, from that fortnight after that onwards with Vishnu Smaranam and possibly Padasevanam. So till then, keep listening to the glory of the Lord, keep singing the glory of the Lord, enjoy the Shravanam Kirtanam combo, which is the best for Kali Yuga. We will conclude with this.
Pajin, we started with a Guru Kirtan. We're going to end with a Guru Kirtan, but the difference with this Kirtan is of course, a Radio Sai version of the Sikh Guru Kirtan. On the other side of it, as always, we'll be joined by Brother Chandu with this program, Love to Love. Thank you, dear listeners, for being with us. We offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet.
करता पूरक निरपार निर्वैर अकाल मूरत अजोनि से भंग गुरु प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच भगवन